In this episode, the United States Bankruptcy Appellate Panel of the Ninth Circuit hears oral argument in Henry Kohler, a bankruptcy appeal that turns on whether a debtor's homestead exemption was validly waived during an earlier Chapter 13 bankruptcy proceeding. The appellant, proceeding pro se, argues that he never agreed to waive his California homestead exemption and never signed any document consenting to that waiver. He contends that the bankruptcy court erred in sustaining a trustee's objection to his exemption claim after the case converted to Chapter 7. The appellee trustee counters that the debtor, through his attorney, entered into a binding stipulation during the Chapter 13 case that resolved multiple pending motions, including an objection to exemptions, and that in exchange the debtor obtained significant benefits, including a waiver of an appeal bond to pursue a state court appeal. The panel must decide whether that stipulation, embodied in a court order, effectively waived the debtor's homestead protection, even though the debtor now disputes both his consent and the existence of a signed waiver document. At stake is the interaction between bankruptcy exemption law, the finality of court orders, and the scope of an attorney's authority to bind a client.
Okay, we see Mr. Kohler. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Your Honor.
Okay, would you like to reserve a little time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would. I think 5 minutes is...
Okay, now can you see a clock from where you are?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so I'll give you the same caveat that you can stop anytime you want, you can invade your time if you want. We'll give you a gentle reminder if you're invading it, okay?
Okay, I expect my opening remarks will be short.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Well, please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Basically, the fundamental issue here in front of the court is the issue of public policy and homestead exemptions. The federal courts and state courts are very strongly in favor of the homestead exemption.
A homestead exemption protects a debtor's equity in a primary residence from creditors in bankruptcy. Under federal bankruptcy law, each state may opt out of the federal exemption scheme and provide its own. California offers an automatic homestead exemption, meaning a debtor does not need to record a separate declaration before filing bankruptcy. It attaches by operation of law when the bankruptcy petition is filed. The policy behind homestead exemptions is to prevent debtors from being rendered homeless and to give families a fresh start.
And the issue before us is the court made an error in denying my homestead exemption. The federal statutes, in particular, In re Smith, state that a debtor may use Section 522F to avoid a homestead, notwithstanding the waiver of a homestead exemption.
Section 522F of the Bankruptcy Code allows a debtor to avoid certain liens that impair an exemption. Specifically, a debtor may ask the court to strip off a judicial lien to the extent it eats into the value protected by an exemption like a homestead. It is a powerful tool, but it is available only if the debtor has a valid exemption in the first place. That is why the question of waiver is so important here. If the exemption was waived, Section 522F, avoidance is not available.
I don't think that there's any evidence presented in this appeal or in the trial court that there was a waiver of a homestead exemption as required.
There wasn't, Mr. Kohler, there wasn't a waiver, but there was a prior adjudication, which, you know, an understanding is that you, through counsel, stipulated to allow your appeal to continue and to remain and proceed in Chapter 13.
Chapter 13 is a reorganization bankruptcy in which an individual debtor proposes a repayment plan over 3 to 5 years and keeps assets while paying creditors from future income. Chapter 7 is a liquidation bankruptcy in which a trustee collects and sells non-exempt assets to pay creditors, and the debtor receives a discharge of remaining debt. A Chapter 13 case can be converted to Chapter 7 if the debtor fails to make plan payments or if the plan is not feasible. Conversion resets certain timelines and can trigger new objections to exemptions.
So by the time you amended it, why hadn't that decision already been made?
Well, I did a motion to the court that I never agreed. I never signed any document.
You had a lawyer. I mean, you had
a lawyer. You had a lawyer. Yeah. But he flip-flops in the first hearing in August to the second hearing. He says, well, there's some agreement. But the agreement is very ambiguous as to what it is, just the way that the homestead exemption.
No, it's just an agreement that an objection to your exemption will be sustained. And it is clear that that is taking out all homestead exemptions because it applies to that one and any that could be made. And that's the basis by which you go forward and then confirm your plan, which recognizes the effect of that, which is the creation of a lien prior to any interest that you had.
Well, I beg your pardon, Your Honor, but apparently, as I read the record, if I hadn't agreed supposedly to this waiver of a homestead exemption, then I suppose a court would have turned the Chapter 13 into a 7.
No, not necessarily, because you wanted to continue to challenge the underlying appeal for the judgment, is my understanding. You did, and it went to the Court of Appeals and then petition for review. So, I mean, that was kind of the deal, you know, in the court's parlance, that was the deal that was struck.
Well, when the court said in the August hearing about there was discussion about whether I should appear for the September hearing, which I had no notice of from my attorney. If you look at my motion, there's colloquially of emails that are unresponded to by my attorney. At least in the state court, I can't speak for the appellate court, but in the state court, when something very substantive is being waived, the court wants to hear directly from the party. And that was not done here. The requirements of the state statute for waiver of a homestead exemption were never met here. This could easily be resolved by the court issuing an order, okay, prepare the papers for the waiver and file, and then I'll give you permission to file those papers. Those papers were never prepared. There was no waiver. There's nothing in the entire record before the court which the creditor here has urged the court to look at. There's nothing anywhere that says I'm considering waiving my homestead exemption. We have Schwab speaking, but not me. And I've stated under oath in my motion, I've never received anything from Mr. Schwab on this subject. I've gone over my emails, everything.
Why isn't that a matter between you and your counsel then? I hate to say that, but I mean, in the system that we have, there was no appeal of the original order. The Chapter 13 went on for a considerable amount of time. There was no action taken at either of those times to raise these matters. Why aren't they final and done?
Because even if you decide the declaratory homestead exemption, the automatic exemption cannot be defeated by the trustee. I mean, that's why the state came up with the automatic homestead exemption, to protect the debtor in these circumstances.
I think the court would really have liked to have known that at the time that the agreement or the stipulation was entered and the order was then entered.
Well, there's no stipulation signed by me. And if you look at carefully at the transcript, Mr. Schwab basically bows out and lets Mr. The other attorney, I can't think of his name at the moment, speak for what kind of agreement there's been. Mr. Schwab doesn't say that I've waived the homestead exemption. He leaves up to the opposing counsel. I just think this, the ambiguities in that hearing do not justify throwing the homestead exemption away. It went against public policy that we have so strongly for it. The main argument I receive in looking at these papers is that the continuing argument that somehow I've committed fraud, when a judge who heard evidence for 2 days said twice in his decision, the state court said twice that I did not commit fraud, there's no malice. Simply, I understood that I owned those fees, and the court ruled that, contrary to the Reynolds case, that he could latch on to the award of attorney's fees on the defending the cross complaint and apply those to the complaint. And you can't do that.
But the fraud wasn't any basis for the stipulation to sustain the objection in the Chapter 13 prior to conversion of the Chapter 7. In the first order, that never really was elevated to having to be an issue because you three counsel agreed.
I don't know who the third counsel is that agreed. I didn't agree to it.
You did through your counsel.
I don't think the counsel can take the baby and throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think that's our law.
Well, except that you were in bankruptcy court.
Maybe it's in the bankruptcy court. The hearing on the discharge, the judge completely ignored his own decision.
But that's not before us either, sir. I mean, I don't mean to be contrary, but it seemed pretty clear that this issue was raised within the 13 between your counsel, which we presume was in consultation with you, and enter an order sustaining the objection for the express purpose of elevating the lien that was given to ahead of your interest. And that's a final order.
But I wasn't aware of that order. In later papers filed in the court, I'm asking the court reaffirm that I have a homestead exemption because I never heard from my lawyer about making sure that we have that homestead exemption. I don't think a lawyer who's supposedly representing the debtor can go ahead and waive his homestead exemption without clear documentation before the court that this is done. The state court doesn't permit that. The state court says that the waiver has to be in conformance with the way that the matter was recorded in the first place. They have those standards. So, and those standards don't mean anything if the court would affirm the bankruptcy court. And I don't think that's the intent of the bankruptcy court law.
Well, if you want to pause now, you could, and we can hear from the appellee, and you can reserve a little more time if you'd like to do that.
The code under the bankruptcy code, as I understand it, prohibits
Section 522E. of the Bankruptcy Code provides that a waiver of an exemption in favor of an unsecured creditor is unenforceable. The purpose is to prevent overreaching by creditors before bankruptcy. Courts have debated whether this bar on waivers applies only to pre-bankruptcy agreements or also to stipulations entered in the bankruptcy case itself, especially when the stipulation is approved by court order and forms part of a broader settlement. That distinction is at the heart of this appeal.
Exemption waivers executed in favor of an unsecured creditor. That was the case at this time. They were an unsecured creditor, and this proceeding here under 11 U.S.C. 522, you can't... waiver's no good.
Okay, you're right at your 5 minutes if you want to pause for a little while.
I just added, I'm just quoting here from Love versus Menick, 341, Fed Second, 680, 682. Exemption rights are to be determined on the basis of conditions existing at the time of filing the bankruptcy petition. And the trustee doesn't have the authority to go ahead and throw my automatic homestead exemption out. I'll waive any further time on the opening. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Appellee's Counsel, do you want to go ahead?
Good morning, Your Honors. Gabriel Herrera on behalf of the Chapter 7 trustee, Jeffrey Richards.
Counsel for the appellee, the Chapter 7 trustee Jeffrey Richards, now begins argument in support of affirming the bankruptcy court.
And the appellee in this matter, and may it please the court. This is a case that has a long and drawn-out history in which the debtor has attempted to thwart a creditor who has a judgment for conversion and elder abuse from being able to collect. There have been many appeals, trials, and petitions to the California Supreme Court that have been unsuccessful. And really, Your Honors, the sole issue on this matter is whether the bankruptcy court properly sustained the trustee's objection to a claim of to the debtor's claim of exemption after the debtor struck a deal with the creditor at issue to resolve numerous issues, including an objection to a claim of exemption, motions to convert, and an objection to the confirmation of a Chapter 13 plan. And the answer, Your Honor, is that the bankruptcy court's decision should be affirmed. The deal was a deal that was struck for which the debtor received significant benefits. And as the bankruptcy court noted, a deal is a deal, particularly when it is backed by a federal court order. And I think it's monumental to have an understanding of the procedural background in this proceeding. And I believe Judge Spraker has referenced many of the facts that were belied the situation when this deal occurred. In addition to the resolution of the objections and the motion to convert, it's important to stress that there were other issues that were plaguing this case and for which the debtor was attempting to receive benefits from. This was the second bankruptcy case that the debtor filed. And in this second bankruptcy case, the debtor was attempting to appeal the judgment that was entered in favor of the creditors. And in order to appeal, the debtor had to obtain a bond.
When a judgment debtor wants to appeal a state court money judgment, the court typically requires the posting of an appeal bond to protect the judgment creditor during the appeal. The bond ensures that if the appeal fails, the creditor can collect. A debtor may seek a waiver of the bond requirement, often on grounds of insolvency or hardship. Here, the trustee argues that waiving the bond requirement was a key benefit the debtor received in exchange for stipulating to the exemption objection.
And he tried to obtain a waiver of the bond, which was denied, which predicated this bankruptcy proceeding. And as part of the deal that was struck, the appeal bond was waived so that Mr. Kohler could appeal, because originally the state court had denied the request to have the appeal bond waived because there was significant equity in the subject property that's at issue. And so he was able to, through this bankruptcy proceeding and through the deal that was struck with the creditor, to have that appeal bond waived because he agreed that the objection to the claim of exemption would be sustained and any further claim of exemption would be sustained and not allowed. And so it's pivotal to have that understanding because the debtor received a significant benefit and was able to appeal the judgment that occurred and make petitions to the court, to the California Supreme Court, which were, again, unsuccessful. And in the end, had the debtor not obtained or entered into this deal, inevitably he would have had to obtain an appeal bond, which that bond would be required to have some sort of collateral, which presumably would be the subject property at issue, which then, when he was unsuccessful, the creditors at issue could make a claim to the bond. And then the bond would then turn to the collateral, which, again, presumably would be the subject property because that's what had significant equity in this case. There is a reference by the debtor on this appeal and in his argument that there's no evidence in the record that he understood that he was waiving his exemption or that the exemption was sustained. And I'll note for the court that the debtor signed declarations that were proffered to the court recognizing that that he had entered into this deal. And that's why when there's the Chapter 13 plan sustained, it includes non-standard provisions, which recognizes that
a Chapter 13 plan must comply with the bankruptcy code, but it may include non-standard provisions tailored to a particular case. These are terms outside the court's template form and appear in a separate section of the plan document. Examples include stipulations about exemptions, agreements to sell property, or waivers of objections. Non-standard provisions are binding once the plan is confirmed by the court, and they shape the rights of the debtor, creditors, and trustee going forward.
He doesn't have a homestead exemption, and the appeal was going to be played out. And then pending that appeal, his property would have to be sold or he would have to be refinanced to pay the creditor, which inevitably didn't happen and resulted in the conversion of the case to the Chapter 7. So, again, I agree with Judge Spricker's statement that the debtor didn't know. And it was waived through counsel. And if there were issues related to counsel, that's between the debtor and his counsel. That is not something that was before the bankruptcy court. And if you note that in the opposition to the trustee's objection to the debtor's claim of exemption, the opposition doesn't submit any evidence. And so there was nothing before the bankruptcy court on that issue, other than the bankruptcy court being well aware of the procedural backgrounds in this case, which resulted in the confirmation of the plan, the sustaining of the debtor's claim of exemption originally, and then it resulted in the conversion of the Chapter 7 inevitably, and then the trustee's objection. So I will submit that there is evidence. The debtor also makes claims that 11 U.S.C. Section 522E, I think, prevents a waiver of an exemption for an unsecured creditor. And I'll submit to the court, I believe the application of 11 U.S.C. Section 522E applies to waivers that occurred prior to bankruptcy, not deals that occur in the bankruptcy process that are backed by a federal court order, which was done by the bankruptcy court. So again, Your Honors, I believe that the bankruptcy court's order should be properly sustained or affirmed in this matter. I think the last issue is that this is a declared homestead, declared exemption, which has no application to bankruptcy proceedings. But at the end of the day, a deal is a deal, as the bankruptcy court noted, and the debtor received the benefits of that deal, and now he has to reap the consequences. Okay. Unless the court has anything to add, I have nothing to add here.
Okay, Judge Spricker.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we'll turn back to the appellant for a few minutes of rebuttal.
I said in my papers, and I think I said earlier, I have not waived my homestead exemption. There's no evidence I waived it. Put all that aside, homestead exemptions are a very serious matter, and proceedings in the bankruptcy court are very serious. There was an amended plan filed that says I waived the homestead exemption. I've attacked that I never signed that document. I did a motion to this court to strike the arguments based upon that document that I waived the homestead exemption. The amended plan says I did. I never signed that document. I attached to my motion emails requesting information from my attorney. I don't have it right in front of me at the moment, but I've documented my position. I never signed this homestead waiver. I would never give up my home 50 years. I still had my appellate rights with the court, whether this was granted or not. There hadn't been a decision by the appellate court at the time. So there was no consideration for this waiver. I just think the bankruptcy law, as I've documented in my brief, is very strong that there's no waiver. But I would submit to the court that the court should look at that document and ask Mr. Pereira here, for the trustee, come up with a signed document for that I ever signed a waiver of my homestead exemption. And the purported amended bankruptcy plan and the two declarations that he argues about all incorporate that amended plan and the statements in there. I never signed that document. And this is a, forgive me, but this goes to nefarious practices in the court. And I don't think the court can throw out a homestead exemption based upon these nefarious practices. And the court should confirm for itself, or order the trial court, the bankruptcy court, to order that document to be produced and examined as to whether I signed it or not. That he's supposed to retain that document. So if the court, I would suggest to the court that the standards for review here, the homestead can't be thrown away, waived, based upon an S/S filing and no original documentation to support that. That's why the lawyer is under obligation to retain the original document for 3 years. I've asked him to send me a copy of that. It seems to me it's the trustee's burden here, if they want to sustain this bankruptcy waiver of my homestead, to come up with a signed document. And that would, if it turned out that I didn't sign that document, which is the fact, that would be the end of this. And it seems to me if I signed it, that would be the end of it too. So I think that's more important than the words back and forth between me and Mr. Herrera. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Nope. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. It's under submission. We'll do our best to get you a written decision as soon as we can. Thank you. Okay. May we call the next matter, please?
The panel took the case under submission at the close of argument. A written decision will be issued in due course. Because this is a bankruptcy appellate panel ruling, it will resolve the dispute as a matter of appellate review, examining whether the bankruptcy court abused its discretion or committed legal error in sustaining the trustee's objection to the homestead exemption. No outcome is implied by the questions asked during oral argument.